From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about the summer. We're here, we might as well enjoy it. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Well, hello, Kathy, there in Spain. Ross, you're there, of course, in Toronto, which is in Canada, by the way. It's summertime. I don't know that Ross really understands what summer is up there in Toronto, but Kathy, I do know that in Spain, you definitely understand summer.
Oh, yeah.
Deeply in
and
your
we
bones.
We had to come a little early. Yeah. A little early. It's actually the Weather Service here issued a whole statement because apparently you keep seeing articles saying, oh, this is normal to be this hot in Spain at this time of year. And he's like, no, it's not. This is abnormal. We're way over. Just shut up. Shut up. It's hot. Wow. Then it is. Yeah.
Well, something that won't cool us off, but might at least give us a little bit of a distraction. We like during the summer to take a look at words of the summer. That's always fun. There's so many different ones. And we have probably a quiz for me, I'm guessing, coming up about words of the summer.
We do. But first, we have a pet peeve.
Oh, good.
And it's from Kathy, but not me, Kathy. Kathy in San Diego wrote this. She said, I love this, Kathy. She said, you asked for pet peeves? Here's one of mine, which is incredibly nitpicky, I must admit, but I thought you might empathize, and we do. She said, it's the mistakenly used hoist on his own petard. I just love this woman. She said, more specifically, I speak of those times when I hear or read someone saying something along the lines of, yes, I was hoisted on my own petard. All right, I think. They get points for quoting Shakespeare, but it's hoist, not hoisted.
And it's not on, is it?
No, it's by.
By, that's right.
And I just wanted to say to Kathy in San Diego, I, Kathy and Armia, am your soul sister, because it's a feat, but it drives me crazy too. That's all.
But okay, let's ask Fletcher something now. Let's do a little pet peeve quiz. Why is it hoist and not hoisted?
Well, no, I don't know why it would be hoist rather than hoisted. Hoist sounds better. I like that better. Hoisted sounds real weird.
Okay, it's interesting, Fletcher, because there's an old word in English, a verb, hoist.
Oh, so hoist would have been the past tense.
Exactly.
It was the past participle of an obsolete, now a verb that's now obsolete, hoist.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And a hoist, was it hoist or hoist, Ross? Do you know?
I don't know.
I think it's hoist.
I was just nervously looking that up, Kathy, as we spoke.
Why don't I keep speaking and you keep nervously looking it up and we'll pretend we knew
it?
Okay,
we'll pretend we knew it. Yeah.
But hoist, as Ross will now tell us, meant to raise with effort or exertion. Like hoist, actually.
Right.
I mean, hoist, though, implied like you're using ropes and stuff. I mean, when you hoist something, you're doing that. Hoist was not that. Hoist, you could just, it was you're raising with effort. It could be you're doing it with your hands, presumably. I mean,
which goes to the idiom, actually, because you're hoising, you're lifting a petard, which is a bomb, onto a door or something. And sometimes the bomb goes off too quickly and you're...
And you are the one who is hoist.
Hoist, right.
Indeed. I believe it was in Hamlet where some poor soul was hoist.
As we were talking, it is hoist.
A Z sound?
A Z sound, yeah.
So it's hoist. Hoist.
Apparently then it came into New England and people also said he's in Scots and New England talk too as well.
I
didn't know that. Yeah.
Because I'm seeing the 15th century when they pulled their ropes, they would do how he's-a, and then he's-a became hoist.
Yeah.
And then the hoist became the verb.
But the Old Norse, it was hisa up. But is it Old Norse? I don't know Old Norse at all. Is it hisa or hisa in Old Norse?
Isa.
If there are any Old Norse speakers out there, let us know.
I'm sure we've cornered the Old Norse market. Demographic.
One time I was at the library book sale, I found a book, Old Norse, like a grammar of Old Norse. So we put it online to sell. It sold instantly. So I guess there are people who are really into Old Norse.
Let me ask you, when people say, let's leave aside the hoisted or hoist right now, but when people say hoist on one's own petard, what do you think they're imagining?
I think they're picturing like a stick or something. I'm not kidding. Like then you get caught on and you raise yourself on it. Somehow you winch yourself up. That's what I always pictured. Like someone caught by their shirt.
Yeah.
Maybe? I think you're right. I think that's a good one, Kat.
I think so too.
That's good.
I think so too. Do you think, would you in that case imagine that your petard is your shirt?
It's either your shirt or the thing that you're caught on.
The hook,
the little hook
or stick.
Yeah. Like I sort of think of a harness.
Okay.
And you're lifted up by your
harness. That's funny.
That's what I'm picturing. I don't know. I sort of something winched up on a harness is what I picture.
And I get it.
I don't know.
I get it because when you hoist something, you don't think of a little bomb going off like and blowing you up into the air.
No.
Which is exactly what it means.
Right.
I mean, I was going to say that the one key thing is when you're hoist by your own petard, the bomb blows up and you're going, boom.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
But when we talk about hoist now, we're thinking about you know, pulling the rope and lifting something heavy up, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it makes sense why people would get that wrong, on instead of with or by. Is it with or by? By?
By.
Hoist by. You're on petard. Yeah. The petard is hoisting you.
Right.
But one minor quibble. I mean, we're talking here about an idiom, which is obviously hoist. But to be really technical, hoisted, I mean, hoist is a verb now.
Mm-hmm.
So you could argue you're putting it into modern English. So you are hoisted by your own petard in this case.
Well, if you're putting it into modern English, you're just getting blown up by your own bomb, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay, but speaking of
that
modern
doesn't
English,
sound good.
Speaking of modern English, there's a word hoist, and this is a direct derivative of the word hoist that's in, you know, kind of modern English. It's in a lot of movies from the 30s and 40s. Do you know what that word could be, Fletcher? Related directly to hoist. Slightly different pronunciation, though.
Is it heist?
Yes! We gotta blow this joint!
You got it, Fletcher!
That's related, huh?
It's a local U.S. pronunciation of hoist.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that really cool?
Yeah.
A bank heist comes in, and the idea was basically you're hoisting your gun to hold up a person.
Well, hold up,
robbing.
Right? You just said it right there, hold up.
Exactly. Isn't that cool?
Isn't that cool?
That is really
cool. It didn't start until the 30s. You could see it all the gangs. Come on, we're going to heist this joint. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Come on, you know?
Oh, wow.
Oh, God, here I go with my bad acting. But I get excited.
Yeah, that's not a very convincing 30s bank.
I could have been a contender. No, that's bad, too.
That's the 50s.
That was 50s, Kat.
Yeah. Okay, let me go back to Cagney. Top of the world, huh?
There you go. That's good.
Okay, we have a message, an email from Witt in North Carolina. And Fletcher, we're going to ask you the same question.
Okay.
Is it pleaded or pled guilty? Now, Witt said, I said pled and was summarily corrected.
Uh-huh.
But I stand by my pled. What say ye, Fletcher? Pled guilty or plead guilty?
So we're talking about the past tense. If I plead guilty a week later, you can say that I either pled guilty or I pleaded guilty, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that either one is okay, but if you are in the legal world, like actually writing it legally, I think it's pleaded. I'm not positive about that last part. I think either one is actually fine.
Absolutely. It's funny because a lot of people think pled is completely wrong.
Uh-huh.
And it is not. I mean, it follows the old pat bleed, bled, speeds, bed, blah, 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 blah. That said, pleaded is more popular in the courtroom.
Okay.
There was one thing we found. The Supreme Court used pleaded in more than 3,000 opinions. It used pled in 26.
Oh.
So that's like,
yeah. I just want to add a little bit of a corrective here. We had talked about this before. We call it ablaut when the verb changes with the sound rather than like adding an ED to it. You know, we like bleed.
Oh,
we don't say bleeded, we say bled, like Cass said. Speeded, we say sped. In this case, this is probably pled is probably an artificial patterning on that, because the original would have been pleated. It was not one of those where it changes inside. It would have been pleated, and then people basically changed it on the pattern of pleated and bled. It kind of was reversed. It's looking backwards to the past, even though that past of pleated, of pled, never existed.
But now at this point.
But now acceptable.
Yeah. Okay, now, Fletcher, we're going to move on.
I'll sing now.
Please, yeah.
Summertime. Yeah. And the living is easy.
We talked Midsummer last week. Now we're going to talk straight summer.
just to remind people, Midsummer, it turns out, is not the middle of the summer, except it used to be, sort of. How about that?
If you count April as summer.
How's that for clarity? Okay.
Yeah. Okay, summer, it comes actually from the Sanskrit sama, season. So basically the idea initially was sort of season, and then it becomes summer.
Hmm.
So we have a bunch of quizzes here to give you. But first of all, this is what really got us. Do you know the definition of heat wave? Kathy is in a heat wave right now, I believe, in Granada.
I could sing a song about that too, more than the Vandellas, but I won't.
Yes, you won't. Thank you.
There are a lot of songs about being hot, aren't there?
I know, there are. But this one got us because we didn't really know about this word, the two words heat wave. Do you know what the definition is?
No, I didn't even know there was a technical definition of a heat wave. Now I'm going to guess.
That's what shocked us. We had no idea either.
Yeah, it must, of course, be a certain number of days over a certain temperature.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what those days or that temperature would be.
Well, we can ask you the European State of Climate 2023 definition, which was a period of at least three consecutive days when both the daily surface air temperature minima and maxima are higher than the highest 5% values for the day in question during the 1991 to 2020 reference period. That's a quick, easy way to think about it, isn't it?
Wait, so
I like
you
the
like
World Meteorological Organization, Ross, but go on, Fletcher.
I was going to say, so you've got like three or more days over, way over a certain average the average temperature for those days.
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Although now the World Meteorological Organization has it as more than five consecutive days exceeding the average maximum temperature by 5 degrees Celsius or 9 degrees Fahrenheit.
And in the U.S., it's two or more days. I like this one. Two or more days of excessively hot weather. I think that's the
best. That's nice. That's nice and easy.
That's quick, easy. We get it. But the weird thing about the whole thing was it didn't originally mean what we think it means. A heat wave and cold wave had a different meaning.
I never even
ago.
Heard a cold wave. I'm just going to interject.
Yeah, me
cold
neither.
Wave, I had never heard of.
No, I hadn't either, but the definition, they did have it then.
I know they did, so, Ross, but I'm just saying.
I agree. I never would say cold wave. Yeah, I'd say heat wave.
You know why that sounds so weird is because heat wave, you can imagine the waves, right, coming off the ground, the waves
of
heat.
Yeah.
You picture it.
And a cold wave, obviously, you don't.
You don't. No. Because the waves are frozen.
They're cubes.
But it was weird because it really literally meant a wave of hot weather that passes from one place to another. Kind of like a thunderstorm moving in and moving out.
Uh-huh, right.
Or an earthquake or something. You have like the you know what I mean?
Yeah, you didn't have a static heat wave, which is really interesting. And when you think about it, it's a wave. A wave isn't static. So the original meaning made sense. The current meaning, in a way, doesn't.
Yeah, so I don't know meteorological definitions, but we hear now about a heat dome a lot, right? Do you hear about that?
Yeah, we do.
So is that...
That's the new scary thing.
Is that when the heat just sits there and it doesn't wave through? Like, it's not a wave, it just...
Exactly.
It plops
it's
down on you.
It's a huge thing of high
there.
Pressure. Kind of, it reminds me of, you know how you put those things when you microwave something and you put the dome on it so your food doesn't dry out?
Right.
To me, that's what a heat dome is, really, because it traps the hot air. It's like you're stuck in this like pot of hot air.
Mm-hmm. It's a dome. It is a dome of hot, of warm air that is parked. It parks over where you are. The thing is, though, it's really the same thing as heat wave, really, when you get down to it.
Well, a wave.
No, I disagree, Ross. I don't think that it is.
It sounds like the wave moves through, right? The heat dome obviously is going to end at some point, but it just plops down and sits on you.
It's plopped.
But we just said a heat wave is two or more days of excessive heat. So the wave has not moved through. The wave is
okay,
there.
Okay, so the dome can cause a heat wave.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I think. But I don't think...
We are all meteorologists, of course.
Clearly, none of us have any meteorological background. I think we're going to get letters saying, well, obviously, this is... No.
That's good.
Stick with the language, people. Okay.
Now we're going to, Fletcher, move on. Dog days of summer. Is this an evocative term derived from seeing dogs lazing about in the heat? From the word dopenides in Anglo-Saxon, the time of year between sowing, dop, and it's dof, actually, and before en, the death's harvest, or from a perceived dog in the summer sky?
Well, we've talked about this before, and none of what you just said sounds anything like what I thought we'd talked about before. the closest thing is the perceived dog in the summer sky, because I thought it had
I
thought it had something to do with Sirius, the dog star, right?
Yes.
And Ross got a little clever with that.
Yes, it is. It's Sirius, the dog star.
In what way? How does that turn into the dog days of summer? Like, there's a star in the sky, so what?
Oh, Sirius is in the constellation Canis Major. And Canis Major, the big dog, greater dog, and that shows up in the summer
okay.
when it's hot.
There we go.
So then you know, actually, I was reading Virgil today, and actually he just has a thing of tums sterilis urere Sirius agros. Then Sirius scorched the earth and made the land sterile. And the idea was that it's right in the middle of a Mediterranean summer. It's really hot.
Mm-hmm. Which we're dealing with
Kathy
here,
is
I
dealing
believe.
With it, yes.
And yeah, so it became, the Greeks and the Romans referred to the, I cannot pronounce this, dog star days, they called it.
Yeah, dies canicularis, yes.
Yeah, from July 3rd on. And because that was when Sirius was bright and they were hot.
Yep.
And I understand them. I feel you, ancient Greeks and Romans. I really do. Next one is kind of not really summery, but we liked it anyway because it's got a sun in it. Make hay while the sun shines. It's an old saying. It means you do something when conditions are good.
Yeah.
We're making hay while the sun shines. Okay, where do you think it came from? We're giving you three chances. One, early modern London criminal slang. The slang word hay meant money. So you're making a living honestly in the daylight, rather than at night when you're going to do your criminal stuff.
That's cute.
Stuff.
That's cute. I like that.
Yeah, I like that. Two, a medieval idiom literally meaning to cut hay while it's still warm out in summery. You do not wait till it gets colder. Three, an offshoot of hit the hay, i.e. going to bed early, originally and paradoxically referring to people lazing about instead of working. The meaning got reversed in the mid-1800s.
That's good. You made some really attractive options there. I think
credit to Ross.
No, they're good. They sort of play into all of the things that I like. One is cute. One has a reversed meaning, which is always fun. I want to say it's just the literal hay one, though, right in the middle.
Yep, you got it. And Kathy, actually, it does really refer to summer. Summer hay harvest does occur in the summer.
Okay, yeah, but I'm saying this was not as
and the idea was
overtly
that you would,
summery.
Oh, actually, because the hay dries out in the summer, and the idea is that you're cutting hay when it's the best time to do it in the summer. It's hot, it's dry, no rain, and you're okay with it. You basically are under the dog star, so it's ready to go.
It's serious timing.
Yeah, it was. the dog Sorry. Hay of summer.
Oh, even worse.
Yeah. Okay, the next one is Midsummer Madness. We were talking about Midsummer Murders, and now we're talking about Midsummer Madness, which means, do you have any idea I must know the definition.
I have never heard this before in my life. I have no
okay.
idea.
I didn't think you had because I haven't heard it that much either. That's what I said. It's foolish or extravagant behavior supposed to occur during the summer.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It comes from one, literally referring to the madness or ergot poisoning deriving from eating rotten wheat just before the next late summer or early fall harvest.
Wow.
From a Shakespearean play. Gee, I wonder what play that refers to. Or from, there is a trick here. Or from the Latin insania media aestate, excuse me, referring to the Sullian proscriptions in which the Roman dictator seized the properties of his enemies.
Wow. Golly. A couple of those are intense. Just Shakespeare. But
okay, you're right, Fletcher. Okay, but, what's the name of the play, Fletcher?
A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Wrong! I've got you, finally, yes. This really got me, because I would have guessed the same thing you did. I thought, of course it comes from Midsummer Night's Dream. It doesn't. It comes from Twelfth Night, 1602.
Yeah, okay.
And we're going to read you the, Kath, you want to read it to him?
Must we?
Yes, let's go through it.
Okay, it's Malvolio and Olivia. Malvolio, remember who commended thy yellow stockings. Olivia, thy yellow stockings? Malvolio, and wish to see thee cross-gartered. Cross-gartered? Go till thou art made if thou desirest to be so. Am I made? If not, let me see thee a servant still. Why, this is very Midsummer Madness.
Lovely.
And I think I am Judy Dench move over.
Yep, that's
am
right.
Am I right?
That's right. That was magnificent.
But it's really funny, though, because I would have sworn it was Midsummer Night's Dream, Fletcher, just well, as you did.
Of course, right?
It seemed like obvious. That's just a giveaway.
Yeah, but that's always the problem, isn't it? Like, when it seems too perfect, that's when the shoe drops out of the sky on your head.
Yep.
Right?
Okay, next.
Like a fish out of water. One, a surprisingly recent metaphor coming from fishermen along the American Atlantic coast, referring to newbie fishermen. Two, an ancient Assyrian proverb from the Greek to the Latin to the French and to the English, referring to dombach fish during droughts around ancient Ur. Three, from Chaucer. Possibly earlier in England, likening monks and Arabians who were out of their element.
Wow. You guys worked on
like
these.
Like a fish out of water.
Chaucer. I like Chaucer.
Yeah. Oh.
You got it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it's interesting. The first Chaucer usage is a little bit off. It's a little bit different. It's a monk, when he is cloisterless, is like to a fish that is waterless.
Oh, okay.
But the idea is there. But then Samuel Purchas's Pilgrimage, 1613, has the Arabians out of the desert are as fishes out of the water. I like that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, Kathy, I think you're suffering right now, which what I would call is a real scorcher. I don't think we need Fletcher to define this word. I think we all know it.
Uh-huh.
And it derives from one, an old French word derived from the Latin meaning to strip off the skin.
Ew.
Two, from a Norse word meaning to dry fish. Three, from a literal translation of the Chinese, jiao tu, meaning to burn.
Boy. Well, when you scorch something, it does kind of strip off the outer layer. So let's go with stripping off the skin. That's horrifying, though.
You're very good.
I got it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it came from the old French, well, actually from the Latin, meaning to flay.
Ew.
And this is like, I hate that sort of thing.
I'm going to throw something out here. First of all, there's an old Norse word. And again, I'm not big on, I'm suddenly, this is like the old Norse day or something. But there's an old Norse word, skorpna, which means to be shriveled, which comes then to, they said, goes into Old English, which is skriman, which means to shrink, dry up. So oddly enough, but we had that second definition, and this is just a real speculation, from a Norse word being to dry fish, I do have to wonder. Maybe people were looking at old Norse people skorpnying their fish, drying them out.
But I don't see the skorpnied fish as much as a scorcher.
Oh, no, I'm really drying it out.
I know you're joking, but I mean, like, I think scorpna should be used from here on in by all of us as shriveled.
That's right, scorpna.
But I can sort of see it, because the fish, like when you dry, I mean, you saw them in the Northwest, you're drying, you know, salmon, they get all
Shrunken. I didn't really see that much because I'm not a fish girl.
I love fish. I love dried fish.
I do not care for fish.
Scorpna fish is my day. I mean, a scorpna.
Yeah, I move the scorpna fish over. Give me some cheese and some wine and a little bread and I'm happy. No scorpna fish.
Okay, moving on.
Going from scorched to going to cool as a cucumber. We're calm. We're composed.
Yeah.
We're self-possessed.
Right.
Now, where did this come from? One, an old farming metaphor from the ideas of cucumbers kept cool under straw and ice so they would not scorpna in the barns. Okay, from an early 1700s John Gay poem referring to cool as, well, cool, not as in warm.
Mm-hmm.
Three, from an old Greek proverb, cucumbers should be eaten cold. Revenge should be hot.
I always understood that revenge was a dish best served cold, but apparently not.
Yeah, but there weren't a Greek people that said that.
Not if you're Greek.
Yeah, right. We want it hot, baby.
Okay. This is a little tough. I want to choose between the first two. Sorry to the Greeks. Let's just go with the poet. It seems a little silly now, but maybe once upon a time, that was a nice little flourish.
Yep, you got it. I'm upset. I did that Greek proverb, and I actually tried to write it. I wrote it in Greek, and I wrote it in modern Greek instead of ancient Greek. So, God, I'm really glad you didn't read it out.
Believe it or not, it had no problem with me, because I just went, bloop, over that to the end. Yeah, Greek writing.
I was going to translate it into English, but it was still not. It was wrong, and it was bad. But, yeah, Fletcher, you're right. It's British poet John Gay, New Song, A New Similes, in 1732. Cool as a cucumber could see the rest of womankind. And the idiom apparently is based on the fact that in hot weather, the inside of a cucumber remains cooler than the outside. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Although it doesn't have anything really to do with being cool. It's really more just calm, self-possessed, really.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, curiously, Ross, did anyone ever call you cool as a cucumber? Was that ever attributed to you?
Me?
Fletcher?
No.
You too?
I
what about you?
No one ever said that to my face, but maybe in private, away from me, they've said that.
Yeah, you seem kind of like that. We mean either, no, Ross. I'm with you.
You and I are hot and...
Revenge should be hot, Ross.
I'm really shocked, Kathy, that I said revenge should be hot. Because I wouldn't do cold revenge. I agree with you. I'd go at it. Gah! Yeah.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Cowell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music and our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.